It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's a magic marker. A felt pen.
It's a mistake.
It's a trap.
It's a fucking comedy.
It's quiet. Maybe too quiet.
It's all happening.
It's a good day to die.
It's a good day to talk about movies.
Welcome back. It is a good day to talk to screenwriter Nick Assunto. I am your host, Duncan. Joining me, as always, is Gardner.
Hey, what's up, folks?
And we will be joined shortly for an interview with Nick Assunto, who, like I said, is a screenwriter who has some very interesting stuff in the works, so you'll be excited to learn about that. That interview is coming up, and we can't wait to share it with you, but before we get to that, let me remind you guys what we do here on GDT. We talk about movies we love and interview independent filmmakers. So today you're getting a little scoop of that independent filmmaker interviewing where, like I said, we'll be talking to a screenwriter, Nick Assunto. But on top of that, we have three other episodes a week for a total of four. That's right, folks. On Monday, we have a mini-series where currently we are talking about the short film Nostalgia, which I, Kari, and others are working on, and we're going through the process of getting that made on that podcast. Last week, we had on Zipporah, a lead actor and the creative director for the film, and next Monday, we'll have on Nathan Dale Harris, who is doing the sound, the score for the short film. On top of that, we have a new Tuesday bonus miniseries coming out where we are talking about Marvel, MCU, slash other DC and superhero-related stuff. So anytime there's a new TV show out or a new movie, we'll be reviewing that on Tuesday. But on top of that, we're also going through the MCU and its back catalog of movies, starting with Iron Man from 2008. So this Tuesday, we didn't have one, because our Marvel episode was the bonus episode this week where we talked about Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. But next week on Tuesday, you'll get your first real Tuesday episode where we start with Iron Man 2008. On top of that episode, we have our Wednesday / Thursday bonus episode, which releases every week on either Wednesday or Thursday. That bonus episode usually focuses on a new TV show, a new movie, or something else relevant. Last week, it was Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, where it was both the Marvel episode and the bonus episode, but going forward, those will be split up. Next week, we have a bonus episode where we will be discussing Mystery Men, we're going to call it a cult film from a few years ago now that some people like, some people don't like, but we'll get into that. We had a guest on for that, so that was fun. He brought Mystery Men with him to be discussed, so that'll be releasing next Wednesday. On top of those episodes, we also have our full-length episodes, like I said, on Fridays, where we interview an independent filmmaker or someone else involved in the filmmaking process. That's what you're listening to right now. This week, we have screenwriter Nick Assunto on, and next week, we'll have artist Steve Chorney on, who you may know from his work on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and the newly released Nicolas Cage movie, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. He's done like a million other movie posters, so you've definitely seen his work, but those are two recent examples that will catch your eye. That's what we've done in the past, that's what we have coming up, and those are the episodes that release every week. Enough of that, I think it's time we get into our interview. Let's share it with our audience right here, right now. Here it is, our interview with Nick Assunto.
We are joined now by a very special guest, screenwriter Nick Assunto, is here today to talk with us about his screenwriting and his career. Nick, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Of course, it's a pleasure. So I gave like a very brief background there, called you a screenwriter, which I'm sure is setting the bar even low. So let's hear exactly what you do as a screenwriter and where you are, because I know that you've got some really interesting, your project is in an interesting place right now. So I'd like to hear about that.
Yeah, which one? The Blacklist?
The Blacklist was what I was referring to, yes. Yeah, but I'd love to hear about everything. But yeah, let's start with that, if you don't mind. And then, if you want to start with your background, and then, you know, you can talk about that. But I was kind of getting a little excited to talk about that.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, so I'm a feature comedy screenwriter. I went to college for theater. which is like a long story. I wanted to go for film, ended up at a school that didn't have film, fell in love with the theater department, started doing improv, sketch comedy. From there, I started doing UCB. I did about 10 years at UCB in New York and LA. And in 2017, up until 2017, I was acting as well. So I did like some commercials in LA, some like non-union stuff. And then I've always wanted to be a screenwriter. And I was writing during that time, decided to quit, focus on my writing full time since then. And now I've had 3 back-to-back scripts trending on the Blacklist and hitting 8. So the first one was optioned in January last year with an indie producer, but I can't say more than that while it's still going through the thing. And then my recent one is a fictional Mel Brooks story called Funny Boy. And that's still in like the top list. It's like, it was number 1 for a day on the site. Now it's probably like somewhere in number 7. And then as of yesterday, I had a third one, my big budget spec. It's a sci-fi adventure comedy, hit another 8 on the Blacklist. So now I've got 3 back-to-back 8s, and I'm pretty excited. I hope it goes somewhere.
So I was definitely selling you absolutely short there, not only by calling you only a screenwriter, but by saying, oh, the Blacklist one, as if, you know, you don't have 3 of them on there going right now, like, or have 2 on there going and 1 that's already been optioned, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Great to hear.
Yeah, I don't feel sold short. Don't worry about it.
Awesome. I wanted to ask if you could, obviously our listeners should check out those scripts on the Blacklist and read them before they get swooped up off of there. But can you talk a little bit about that Mel Brooks one a little bit? Because I know that one sounded interesting to me.
Yeah, that's called Funny Boy. This is I had that idea back in college to write this, and I was like, there's no reason I should write this. This is not going to go anywhere because it can without Mel Brooks support, and it won't without Mel Brooks support ever. I know that, but like, it's like fanfic for me. I'm like, he's my comedy hero. So I got into, the idea came after I watched The Producers for like the third time when I was 19 or 20. And in The Producers, Max Bialystock, played by Zero Mostel, the thing at the beginning of the movie that makes him broke and makes him like the whole course of the movie is him and Dean Lawless character needing money so they could go off to live a rich life. He went broke doing a Hamlet musical called Funny Boy. And when they did the musical on Broadway and then the musical film, there's just one line from the musical that gets quoted by the director character whose name I forget, which is "to be or not to be, you mean a lot to me." And that's it. That's the only thing we get, the only glimpse we get in the Funny Boy, the Hamlet musical. And I thought, wouldn't it be funny if Mel Brooks actually tried to do this? And that's how he came up with the idea for The Producers ultimately. So I have it set in 1963. It's right after he finished writing on The Show of Shows. And he just goes to New York to do something, to like find his artistic voice as a writer. And he puts up a Hamlet musical on Broadway. And who auditions but like Anne Bancroft, Gene Wilder, Dom DeLuise, Cloris Leachman, Cleavon Little, Harvey Korman, Marty Feldman. These guys all audition. He's like, great, I'm going to work with these actors I don't know. And he immediately falls in love with Anne Bancroft in the story. And he takes out a bunch of money from loan sharks to get the production going. It's very silly. It's very like in the Mel Brooks style. I was like, I'm going to tell a Mel Brooks biopic in a Mel Brooks format. It's like a parody of a parody film. So it's just this adventure of him trying to put this Hamlet musical on Broadway because he's so desperate to find his artistic voice, which I pulled that from like my own life of just like, what do I want to write? What do I want to work on? What do I love? What's my comedic voice? And ultimately, in the end, the third act is the Hamlet musical, which I wrote the full one-act musical for this thing, which was like 35 pages. Then I trimmed it down to like 17 in the script because it just takes up too much time. It doesn't move the plot forward. So the script has just like the best of moments. And it fails miserably, just like the beginning of The Producers. So it gives him the idea for The Producers. That's like the entire, spoilers, the entire story is just him coming up with The Producers and fall in love with Anne Bancroft.
That's awesome. What was the the Mel Brooks film that made you fall in love with him, that he became your comedy hero?
Probably Young Frankenstein and The Producers, places out. Those are like my top 3. I mean, I grew up watching, I probably saw Robin Hood Men in Tights first because I was born in 86 and that was what, 94. So that one was going around when I was a kid and I watched that a ton. I know me and my brother and friends just quoted all the time, saw Spaceballs a lot. And then I grew up in a house living with my grandparents upstairs because my parents were so young. And my grandpa had HBO on cable and a V8. So he would just like bootleg everything off HBO that played on VHSs. And I would just watch tapes. So I think that's how I found History of the World Part 1. or high anxiety, some of them. And then when I was in college, my mom sent me like the gift box of like the Mel collection, which also had To Be or Not to Be, which he didn't direct. He started with Anne Bancroft. So that pulled from that a lot as well, especially when they sing, oh God, what's the duet? But they sing it in Polish. Sweet Georgie Brown. So they sing Sweet Georgie Brown together in Polish in that film. And it's like a gig they did throughout their marriage on some talk shows. Like I pulled up some clips in the research. That was off tangent. The one that inspired me the most is probably Young Frankenstein. That's my favorite.
And obviously when you're writing the Mel, you know, when what about him, right? You're going to be channeling him. So when you're not, though, do you find yourself drawing inspiration from him in general? And do you see yourself drawing inspiration from other filmmakers too? And could you name them if you do?
Yeah, I mean, for this one, I really honed in on just focusing on Mel Brooks films and interviews that I watched and like documentaries. Like there's that long running BBC documentary where Mel Brooks caught up with the same reporter 3 times over the decades. So I researched those. And I just wanted it to very much be in their voice. But normally when I write, like my influence comes from all over the place. Sam Raimi was the reason I wanted to be a filmmaker in the first place. Army of Darkness, when I saw that when I was 10 years old, I was like, this is the best. This is what I want to do. This really silly, like medieval slapstick horror. But I was always drawn to like the comedy aspects of it. And Edgar Wright, of most recent, I think it's hard to deny that for me, especially like those are the kind of comedies that I love. Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead, World's End, Scott Pilgrim. That style, that visual style of comedy, on top of just like very slapstick, very silly. I get a lot of influence from that, energy from that, essentially. Like if I'm ever down, I'll rewatch, you know, Hot Fuzz. It's probably a top 10 film for me. But those are probably the big three for my writing. Sam, Edgar, and Mel.
You mentioned that you knew early on that you wanted to be a filmmaker. When you say filmmaker, like, did you know that you wanted to be a screenwriter, or was that something that you discovered as a passion later, you know, maybe working with UCB and writing sketches and stuff like that?
Yeah, I knew I wanted to write, but I didn't understand what writing. Well, I just knew I wanted to make movies, I guess, when I was 10. But once I learned about like around 15, 17 age, yeah, I wanted to be a screenwriter. From before then, it was just, I want to make movies or be funny. And I didn't know how or where to like put that in. I went to an all boys Catholic high school. So there was no like, all the money went towards sports. There was no like theater or fun stuff at all for me anyway. So there was nowhere to channel that until I got to college. And that's so around 17, that's 17 as a freshman. I got to start pursuing those things. I immediately started writing plays, short plays, one act plays, sketch comedies. But I wrote my first short story when I was third grade based off of Ghostbusters. Oh, Ghostbusters is awesome. You know, that's a classic. Influence just comedy. I love that blending of genre with comedy. So when I describe my scripts, I usually say they're genre comedies. Funny Boy's the most straight-laced one that I wrote. There's not much genre stuff to it. It's just straight comedy. But yeah.
So what would you say if you had to pick one would be your favorite genre to mix with comedy?
Sci-fi, 100%.
Hell yeah.
What is it about sci-fi in particular?
I just love it. That's what I watch. I don't watch a lot of comedy outside of like Mel Brooks or Edgar Wright. You know, I'm really picky with comedy films. It's hard for me to find one that tickles my funny bone. The last ones were like Booksmart and Game Night. I love those. I thought those were brilliant. But when I go to sit down and watch something, it's going to be the nerdiest thing possible. I'm gonna watch The Matrix. I'm going to watch Speed Racer for the 50th time. I think it's a perfect movie. The critically lampooned Speed Racer. I adore it. And Ghostbusters, I mean, that was that first kickstart for like the blending of sci-fi and horror in there. And I think the comedy came from like, what if sci-fi could defeat horror, essentially, in that script, in the concept. And I don't know, I love that. I think there's so much room to grow in that space. There hasn't been like a lot of huge budget genre comedies. I mean, the Men in Black franchise, definitely.
Yeah, but it's not something that you like really see all that often anymore. I feel like there was kind of like a renaissance for a while in like the 2000s where they're doing a lot of these kinds of cross-genre comedies, and it feels like it's really tapered off recently.
Comedy feels dead right now, which blows my mind, because I feel like we need to laugh more than ever, and that's all I pop out. I can't be serious when I write. I've tried like the one that just hit yesterday on the blacklist is a like big, I was like, I'm gonna write a very serious big budget spec. It's going to be a sci-fi action adventure flick. And I outlined it thoroughly. I based it off the structure of the Indiana Jones films. I'm like, this is going to be so serious. The moment I sat down and started writing, I was popping jokes out because I can't stop. So I'm just, that's my voice, I guess, is what I discovered over the past few years, is blending the humor in and the comedy in. And I end up taking from those films that I love, like the big budget sci-fi stuff or the sci-fi series. Like I binged all of SG-1 during the lockdown in LA. And I like to just deconstruct the tropes from that stuff and just toy with them in my writing to create the comedy. And like, I feel like if you don't mock that stuff on the page, but lovingly mock it, it keeps repeating the pattern. Like when Scream came out, it changed horror for a time. You know, it was like, stop doing these tropes. We're going to show you how silly they are, but also make this great, awesome horror flick. And that's kind of what I try to do with my writing.
I watched Speed Racer for the first time this year, and I texted Gardner and I said, I'm pretty sure this is a masterpiece.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
Or something along those lines. Yeah, so good.
It's like, it's a kind of a masterclass in tone too, because it's so stupid, to give it like a lack of a better word, in that it's this silly concept of, let's take this anime, put it on the big screen, but we're going to commit so hard to every aspect of it. The acting is going to be right in. At no point do the characters doubt that they're in like the silly cartoon, but they're so serious. And like, I get chills during the final race when like they're doing the flashbacks of like all the things Speed was told throughout his life. It's just, it's so, it's great. It's commitment to the concept in such a cool way. I think audiences were ready for it at the time, I guess.
You mentioned that you started writing as early as third grade. Is there a mistake that maybe when you were a little bit older, you made a lot in your early writing that you've learned from?
Not positive, actually. I never really thought of it that way. Like, if I look back and read my old stuff, it makes me cringe. You know, it's not good. I think the mistake was like thinking I was ahead of what I knew while I jumped in, but you have to kind of jump in and start writing anyway. So it's not so much of a mistake, but like a learning curve. Like the first feature I ever wrote, no jokes at all, dead serious, like a Western horror thing. And I was like, yeah, I did like 8 drafts of that over and over. And I was just teaching myself to write. And then I told somebody about it, and they're like, it sounds like The Gunslinger by Stephen King. And if you had not heard of before, the Dark Tower series, I looked it up. I was like, yep, this is the exact same thing. I must have just filtered it in at some point, heard about it, and then just regurgitated this ripoff on the page. So then from there, I was like, all right, I really need to teach myself to write. So I picked up How to Write Movies for Fun and Profit by Thomas Lennon and Robert Ben Grant. I read that like 8 times. And then instead of writing an original script, I rewrote Critters as like a big budget horror comedy. Like, if they remade Critters, and I was like, I'm going to do this to teach myself to write. So that really helped, like sitting there with that book as a guide. And then just rewriting, instead of trying to be original, just rewriting an old movie that I love, just as a sample and an exercise. And that I eventually turned it into like its own original thing. Still not that great because I was learning, but you know, it's all just growth. You just got to keep writing, and eventually you hone in on what your voice is and you get to a place where you're confident in your writing, which only happened to me the past few years. And you kind of just know when you got there, when you've learned, when you hit this point where you're like, I think I'm pretty good at this now. I wouldn't say I'm great, but I think I'm pretty good now.
How much has your writing routine changed over the years? I know a lot of people start off writing and they're very regimented in like the outline treatment, scene cards before I go to script. Some people get to the point where they can just sit down and write the script and go after it. Are you still, you know, like very regimented? Have you loosened up in your writing process at all over the years?
I have never had a regimen. I've done something different for each script. I used to, a few times, like my style, if like the most commonly used style that I use is like vomit drafting and then molding that lump of crappy clay into something through rewrite after rewrite. And I would, you know, get those first drafts out, those vomit drafts out in a few days that are like 60 pages of just bad improv, and then just work on that. But with some of them, I do go into like deep outline. I mean, Funny Boy and the most recent one, which is called Fred, those were started with outlines, but I really veer off the outline a lot because I just, my thing is always following the funny. I kind of know where I want to go by the, like at the end before I jump into a script, but I always want to follow the funny thing that happened and then find ways to call it back and go off of that. So it's always been different. And I'm not the kind of person who writes every day. Never have been. I just kind of like, I'll go through binges. And when I'm thinking about something else, I haven't written for a couple of weeks right now, except for like just light passes and punch ups. But I haven't sat down and like done heavy writing for a couple of weeks because I'm so focused on like what might happen with the Blacklist script. I'm too excited to think about writing something new until I get like a yes or no, and then I can move on.
What would you say the most valuable piece of feedback you've gotten on a script has been?
I don't know like the specific feedback, but there's a writer who I met at the Austin Film Festival years ago named Adam Pava. And he wrote the Box Trolls for he did uncredited writing on the Lego Movie. And he wrote on like Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends. And I used to watch that when I was in college. I love that show. But I met him at AFF. He was wearing a Ghostbusters t-shirt. And I was like, hey, man, nice t-shirt. And we started talking. He's read 3 or 4 of my scripts and given me just the most incredible notes that have helped me get to like the next level and make me think about things in a different way. I'm so grateful for it that like I went through a pay it forward phase where over this past summer, I just read everybody's scripts and sent them notes like nonstop. I'm like, I gotta send this back out in the universe. I took too much goodwill. I got to throw it back out there.
What makes for good feedback when you're writing? You know, what do you look for when you're giving feedback on someone else's script? And what do you hope that you get from someone when you ask them to give you feedback on your script?
You want somebody who understands your concept and what you're going for and helps you see your vision on the page instead of what they would do with it. So you want somebody who's going to see that, know what you're going for, and help you find ways to get there in their notes. A lot of coverage out there that you'll get is going to tell you like, throw this out, start over, write from scratch, whatever. Never. There's no idea that should be thrown out. Somebody has an idea and you just got to find a way to make it work. And in your feedback, your goal should be to push them towards realizing their vision on that page as much as they can.
Has there ever been a time where like you couldn't give feedback because you couldn't connect with that central idea? I mean, what do you do in that circumstance?
Yeah, a couple of times. When friends will like send me a very heavy like drama feature, I tell them flat out, I'm like, I am useless here. I don't think I could help you. This is not my area. I'm not good at dramatic writing because I'm going to read this and no matter what happens, I'm going to be like, a good joke should be right here. There should be a good joke over here. You know what? If you do this, that's a good joke. That's all I could think of during the writing process. So I'll just flat out tell my friends, I'm like, here's some thoughts, but take them with a grain of salt and a shadow of tequila because I cannot write in this space. I'm not the best person to help you here. I ramble so long that you guys are like, oh, we got to unmute and say something now. When's he going to end?
No, not at all. We like the long answers for sure. That's why we do a podcast.
Yeah. Duncan, what were you going to say?
You've given a lot of advice already, but we do like to ask everyone if they have any like best advice that everyone should hear other than just do it, because we always say that like that's like the most common advice. And we like to say that the people who are listening maybe have already decided to just do it, or maybe us ourselves, for example, have decided to just do it. And we want to know like what's the best advice that we could hear from you, like as someone who's had success, obviously, getting stuff made.
Well, nothing made yet. I hope so. I hope so soon. But I'm pretty staunch on this approach. There's a debate in the screenwriting community where it's like learn the rules versus no rules in the writing world. And a lot of like the older pros who've been around for a long time will be like, there are no rules. Don't do anything. Do whatever you want. I slightly disagree with that in that I completely agree with them. I think once you know what you're doing, there are no rules. But I think when you're learning to write, you should learn all those stupid rules that are out there. All those things that'll get a manager or an agent to throw your script away are essentially those stupid rules where it's like, you know, I can't even think of them anymore because now I can break them confidently. But it's like, I think it's important to learn what they are and learn how to toy with them because it's going to help you in your writing anyway to go through that motion. It's like, my argument is you wouldn't just, if you're a painter, you wouldn't just be like, oh, I'm going to paint like Michelangelo right away. I'm not going to learn any part of the craft. I'm just going to go there and I'm going to do whatever I want because I could paint like Michelangelo. And I'm like, I think a lot of the pros forget that they had to learn a long way because they've been pros for like 20, 25 years. And they potentially, I've probably thrown a lot of heat on myself. But I think just learn that bullshit first so that you could then break it all. I think that's just important. That's what I went through. Like, submitting to something like the Austin Film Festival, like those rules are what's going to get you into the second round because those readers know those rules. So it's, I don't know. I it's an annoying debate to me because I'm like, it's a middle ground thing, but I really think, you know, do it first, then break them. Don't just break them without knowing how to do them.
So to get more specific then, because I have a question about the rules of a specific thing that's bugged me when I read other scripts and when I hear what you're supposed to do versus what I see and what works, I guess, mm-hmm. is writing like non-dialogue and not necessarily action in the sense of someone, you know, fighting someone else, but just scenes where there's long stretches of no dialogue, for example. And, you know, I've heard be concise, for example. I've heard get to the point. And then I read other people where they're going into depth. They're kind of writing almost like it's a book where they're describing yeah. things and it's very descriptive. And it feels like a lot of the ones that I read where it's like a movie that I've been blown away by, it's the more descriptive style almost. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. That's where my, I don't want to say confusion, but almost confusion does come in there where I'm like, what should I be doing when I'm trying to get something? Not necessarily because like my point is to get it across to whoever's reading it, right? Because like at the end of the day, that's the goal, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So that's maybe not the best question in the world, but and it's a very specific one. But if you don't mind indulging me.
No, I'd say like, have you ever read like an amateur script that has big chunks of lengthy dialogue like that in the act? I mean, not dialogue, action like that. And had been blown away by it because normally it's just kind of all over the place and they are writing a little novella like and it's a little boring. But then when pros do it, they're still using succinct language and it looks great. So I'm of like, again, the middle ground where it's like, learn to do it your own way. I got a buddy, his name is Frank Tremblay, and he's a director and writer. And when he writes a script, when I read his scripts, the way he does action on the page is so cool. It's so different. It's his own thing. And you could really like feel the rhythm and the pace of the action that's happening. He'll reformat an entire page in a different block of standard screenwriting, but it flows so well that you don't care. And I think it's like finding the way to do it that makes your script look good, but learning what's going to make it look bad first is important. And then not mimicking somebody who does it their own way. Like a lot of people, that like the Quentin Tarantino vibe, like a lot of first time writers who are obsessed with Quentin Tarantino, like I'm gonna write like Quentin Tarantino. I'm like, it's good to do it in practice. It's definitely good to like learn those voices and like learn that style, but then you got to develop your own thing, because if you're just trying to emulate Tarantino on the page, people are gonna be like, what the hell is this? This isn't Quentin Tarantino. This is just you trying to be him. So if you have, I'm all for like big blocks of action as long as they're exciting and not boring and they don't slow down the pace of the read. But I like to divvy, like if I have a big action sequence going, like in the recent one, I do it line by line because I want the pace to be good. I won't do a full paragraph. I'll add like this happens and then next line this happens because I want it to have a speedy flow still and not make the reader get lagged at any point.
It's interesting that you're talking about it from the reader's perspective. I've took a few screenwriting courses in college, and it seems to me like the advantage of like doing the flowery language and stuff is, you know, if you're directing it yourself, mm-hmm. then you're kind of like communicating to yourself and you know exactly what you're going for. But one note I heard a lot was in writing action, to be concise, is like, let the director direct, like don't direct the director and like put them in a box, like give them plenty of room to interpret
yeah.
what it is that you're putting on the page. Is there like some kind of balance there where you're still putting your own flavor on it, but you're not telling the director exactly what they need to be doing?
Definitely. I can get away with this because I write comedies, but I have two set pieces in Freya, the one that just hit the 8 yesterday, that literally say, a big fight happens here. Oh man, it's so cool. Ask the director and the stunt choreographer because what they're going to do is dope. Anyway, move it. And then I write like the end of the fight. But when it's like a smaller thing and I clearly see it visually in my mind while I'm writing, I try to write my action like it's the camera without ever mentioning the camera. I try to paint that visual picture on the page so that inspires them to see it in a similar way that I'm seeing it and maybe, you know, and then add their own flair to it. But I try not to control it further than that.
Going off that and a little bit of what Gardner was saying, can you talk a little bit about having a unique voice in your screenplays? Because there are certain people who obviously you can tell that it's their movie and they're not directing it, for example.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's just learning. The whole voice thing was so, it felt so out of grasp for years. It's just learning how to be yourself on the page and like show who you are in your writing. And it didn't dawn on me for so long until I started popping out like the last few scripts I did. I was like, yeah, I'm just going to let loose and just be me on the page. And I'm going to throw in, like, I don't try to be witty in the action or anything like that. But if I know I can't write an entire chunk of a fight sequence and make it read well. So I'm just going to put this little note here, essentially, that says, you know, do something with this. It'll be neat. And hopefully I can get away with that. I don't know yet. I haven't had evidence that it works fully, but that's kind of just what I do. Did that answer? I can segue again. I don't know if that answered fully. All right, you're nodding. This is a podcast, so I need to tell people.
Yes, yes, you answered my question. I'm sorry.
Visual medium, this film. Nodding in a podcast, it's only hearing.
You would think I would know that by now. I'm the one who's been doing this for a while, but
I don't even listen to podcasts at all. I can't. I don't do them. I don't listen to them.
How much like consumption of other media do you do? Because I know a lot. I know there's screenwriters and filmmakers out there who try to deprive themselves so they don't end up, you know, ripping off someone else's style. Is that something you're concerned about, or are you comfortable in your voice now at this point, where you're like, what I write is just going to be mine. I'm not worried about accidentally, you know, ripping somebody off.
Oh God, no. I watch everything. I'm upset. I mean, since I was a kid, that's I take everything you can. It's a Picasso thing. Great, bad artist copy, great artist steal. Steal everything. There's not like the originality comes from your voice, but like concepts come from like merging, like an original in quotes concept comes from like merging things you love about other movies. You can't really like, I'm not the kind of person who could come up with something wholly original without plucking from different points. Like I could say it's original, but it's not. I took this from that. I took that from there. I took this from here and I merged them and put them in a blender and I turned them into their own new thing that seems new on the page. Potentially, but it in the end I took it from the movies that influenced me. Like the one that was optioned, I stole from, you know, Scream, Truman Show, Cabin in the Woods, and a bunch of 90s and early 2000 rom-coms. I'm like, I'm gonna put them all in a blender and make this new.
If that doesn't sell you on wanting to see that movie, I don't know what will. Putting those movies into a blender, that sounds phenomenal to me.
Oh God, I hope it's I shouldn't even said that much. That's just concept, but I hope it comes to fruition. We'll see.
So you were just talking about watching everything. Do you have like, is there a TV show that you would say is like your go-to right now? I know on this podcast, we're big Severance fans. We did a review of it a couple of weeks ago or maybe a week ago, depending on when this is released.
I haven't watched it yet. I usually avoid I mostly watch films. So when I watch a show, it's usually going to be like the nerdiest show possible. So like right now I'm watching Halo and loving it. The girl played Halo. I don't care that it's off like the game world, because I never really paid attention to the game world anyway. I just played online and shot people, so that's been fun to watch. There's only three episodes so far, but mostly go to movies. Like I finally watched A Quiet Place 2 the other night, which was fantastic. I don't know why I put that off for so long. Actually, I do. I knew I was going to cry because the first one made me cry so much, and I was like, I always put off the ones that are going to make me cry. But yeah, I'm always looking for something new to watch, but I usually go for film, and then if I can't find something new, I'm gonna rewatch Speed Racer again or Hot Fuzz.
Well, it's funny you say that, because earlier when you were talking about how it feels like comedy is kind of dead, like in the film world, I feel like that is definitely the case, but I feel like we're getting a lot of great different kinds of comedy on television, and it's like somewhere the industry just decided like, no, comedy's for television now, and film is for these you know, roller coaster ride type of experiences with blockbusters like the Marvel movies and stuff like that. And I'm enjoying the age of television that we're in right now. I think we're getting a lot of great television, but it is disappointing. And I could, you know, this is totally me pulling this out of my ass. I could be completely wrong, but that's what it feels like to me. And I want to see comedy make that big return in film. I'm enjoying a lot of the TV shows, but it's frustrating in a way.
Yeah, I get you. I like, especially for me, as a comedy writer, I never wanted to write for TV. Like, that wasn't a thing I ever thought about. It wasn't a concept. I just watched TV for entertainment. in between movies. So did not see feature comedies getting made when all I want to do is write feature comedies. I'm like, no. So I get it. But like I TV is in it, you know, it's there's so much of it now too, which is awesome. Like there's gonna be so many more jobs for people out there. I'm like, should I segue to? But I can't. This is I love film too much and I'm just gonna keep like TV as my that's for watching, one's for writing, you know, keep them a little separate.
Is there a genre that you haven't yet written about that you would like to mix with comedy? Obviously, you said that sci-fi is your go-to, but is there one that you haven't tackled yet?
Well, yeah, I've hit it a couple times, but I haven't really gotten one I like. I really, really love horror comedies because, you know, Army of Darkness was that linchpin moment for me that made me want to write or make film. And then, I love Evil Dead 2, the recent Tucker and Dale vs. Evil. I'm just working to find a horror comedy concept that I could really have fun with. I'm writing one with a friend right now that's in the horror comedy space, but we haven't like fully worked it out yet. We're getting there, but I'm still trying to like come up with an original one too. And it's been difficult. I think it's just sci-fi is more natural to me because that's mostly what I watch. It's easier to pull from. And I usually avoid, like I watched a lot of horror films, but I don't watch the crazy horror films. Like, you know, I'm not the Fangoria person. Like there are writers out there who are the Fangoria person. So like they watch every single horror film where I'm like, no, that one looks too scary. That one looks, you know, I just want like the lighter horror, if that makes sense. I want like good to win in the end. I hate a horror movie where everybody dies in the end. That always pisses me off. I'm like, why do they just waste 2 hours for it? You just killed everyone. I'm very sad now. But trying to find that. Man.
Is horror tough to approach because of just how many horror movies there have been because they're so cheap to produce and just like there've been so many different takes and parodies and spins on those tropes. Is that something that presents an obstacle or is it just come down to, I don't know what my best concept is yet.
I mean, a little bit. Sometimes I'll come up with one and then I'll have to like Google it to see if it's already been done. And that's definitely happened a couple times. But they're usually like the vaguer concepts. So I'm like, let me start here. Have there been any horror movies that this is the killer? Oh yeah, there's been 40. Okay, can't do no clown killer. All right. So I guess so in a little bit. Like, I don't know. I think, yeah, that's the, I'm just in a ramble right now. That's the, yeah, I think it is difficult.
Yeah, fair enough.
So you said you're writing one with your friend and you're looking to do horror. Is that what's next for you? The horror, is that what you're going to try to tackle next? I know you said you're kind of focused on getting those off the blacklist right now. And once you do that, you can focus more on writing more. But is horror what you're going to tackle next? Or do you have one that you're like also kind of working on?
Yeah, I never know until I finish a first draft of something. So sometimes I just can't, like, I have so many things that are just 10 to 40 pages of unfinished stuff. And I'm like, which one's going to work on? And it's hard to think about it. So a couple weeks ago, I started writing a horror comedy that I was like, I really like the concept. I thought I could do it on a low budget if I needed, because I was just a little jaded in progress. Like Funny Boy is huge on the blacklist, has a bunch of views, but nobody's going to do anything with it because it needs Mel Brooks. So it's just a spec. I haven't been getting phone calls. So it's like, all right, what's a sidestep here? I could just write something that I can maybe direct on a low budget, figure out how to do that. And I started working on that and then got more good news on the other one. So I haven't really focused. I don't know if I'll go back to that or if I'll start working on something new. I mean, ideally, like, I think what holds me from writing nonstop is just like waiting for a job. Like, oh my God, somebody hire me. It's been 3 scripts in a row on the blacklist with 8 or higher. Just, oh my God, give me a job, please. And I think that's like starting something new while I'm in this in-between phase is just too difficult for me to think about. Like I'm too stuck on the what ifs to just really have fun and sit down and write.
Gardner, I know we're getting close to the end of our time here. Do you have any questions before I get into our final question?
No, I just wanted to say that I'm also really enjoying the Halo show. I think it's getting way too much hate from nerds who are mad that it's not exactly what's in the game, dude. I think they're setting up something pretty good. I think the writing, like everyone's like, oh, the writing is so bad. I think it's pretty good, dude. Y'all need to chill.
Yeah, it's fun. It looks like I texted my friend who I'm writing with. I was like, oh, I started watching Halo. It's pretty cool. Like first episode, so was like, they took the RoboCop approach. I think this is smart. Like, they segued from that a little bit. I thought he was never going to, I thought they were dead inside the suits at first, but they're just in them. Just, so I thought it was just going to be like, but with the memory flashbacks and stuff, very RoboCop. It's like, oh, awesome. It's gonna, he's going to uncover his past and become Master Chief.
He wouldn't have been a compelling protagonist if he was just in the helmet all the time and like never had like showed any emotion. A lot of people are like, oh, Mandalorian wears his helmet all the time. It's like, yeah, but we see him like emote and like do things and have a soft side. Like it no one would have connected with this character if they didn't do that.
It's like Dredd. If you guys saw Dredd, the which is phenomenal. I mean, Carl Urban, his performance is great, but he's not entirely the central character. Olivia Thirlby's character is like our grounding point for the audience to have, like, because if it was just Dredd without her, people would be like, all right, he's just walking around shooting people. But the fact that she's there to be like the human character that we can, you know, connect with, it helps more.
Exactly. See, now I've got a blacklist listed screenwriter tell me my opinion is right, so all the nerds you guys can all fuck off.
Oh geez, starting a battle that you can't. There's two.
Yeah, maybe I don't. You're not maybe win that one. Cut that out. Yeah, maybe I don't.
You're not gonna win that fight.
Angry Halo fans coming after me.
Well, before I do, I actually did want to just plug it one more time that you said you like lighter horror, and I would say that Severance might be falling into that category a little bit, where it's not necessarily horror, but it's got like scary ideas in it, very Black Mirror-esque if you've ever watched that show in ways. But it is more of that kind of like prestige television. So if you're more of a popcorn television, kind of let it, like, you know, you leave your prestige for the movie screen, then it might not be up your alley. But I just wanted to plug it one more time because I know me and Gardner are absolutely loving it, and our audience,
and it can also be very funny.
Yeah, no, it's got humor in it for sure.
It's definitely on my list. It's just I'm gonna get to it in 4 months when everybody's, that's how it always works.
Yeah, fair enough.
I didn't start Game of Thrones until like season 4.
Totally understandable.
Mm-hmm.
Plus you get to binge.
Yep.
Instead of having to wait every agonizing week.
I like to build them up at the stockpile so that when I, yeah, it's my snack corner. Like, I wish I waited with Halo, because now I'm like I'm debating doing it with Obi-Wan, which I'm really looking forward to, because I will watch anything Star Wars all the time. Like, should I just wait until the whole season's done? Or do I have to go week to week? I know I can't, I'm not patient enough to wait, but I know it's the smart play. Actually, no, you know, because spoilers on Twitter, you gotta be careful. No, I gotta watch it.
Yeah, we're gonna be doing a series on that as it comes out week by week, so we don't have an option.
Nice.
So that does bring us to our final question, which we like to ask all of our guests, which is there an independent filmmaker, or a couple if you want to mention more than one, filmmakers that you want to shout out that maybe our audience should check out that potentially they haven't heard of, or that you just want to give some more shine to?
How many times has Jim Cummings been the answer on the show? Oh, none.
I don't know that he has. Yeah, Trailblazer.
Oh, then Jim Cummings for sure. Wolf of Snow Hollow came out independent. That was phenomenal. And then recently The Beta Test was so good. I still haven't watched Thunder Road, his first one, but I'm going to run to it. He's really cool. His stuff is just, from what I gather, he's like so outside of Hollywood. Like, he doesn't want to work in it ever. He just wants to make indie films and like support indie films. He seems like a cool guy. Follows Twitter. You can check it out. But The Wolf of Snow Hollow was awesome. I was blown away by that one.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. I know that we'll absolutely be checking that out for sure, because he sounds right up our alley.
Yeah, he does, like, it's this weird, he acts, writes, and stars in them. And it's like this weird mix of comedy, drama, and horror at all times, and like I don't know how he pulls off the tone, but it's really cool to see.
I love it. Yeah, like Duncan said, that is so up our alley. I'll definitely be checking those out this weekend.
So Nick, thank you so much for stopping by today. We really do appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun.
Absolutely, anytime. We absolutely enjoyed it. We had a great time, and we have to thank you again just for the insight you gave us, not only because it was an enjoyable conversation to have, but because you shared with us a lot of good tips and valuable insight and interesting stuff to think about when we're thinking about movies and movie making.
I appreciate you saying so. I don't know how valuable it will be in the long run, but I'm glad you appreciate it now. Duncan and Gardner, thanks for having me.
Thank you.
There you have it, folks. That was our interview with Nick Assunto. We hope you enjoyed it. We want to thank him for joining us and for coming and giving us his time. We really appreciate it, and we appreciate his answers. He's in a unique position where his screenwriting is getting a lot of attention, so that's very cool, and we hope you will look out for what he's got coming up next. So, again, thank you to Nick for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Nick, for coming on. I really thought this was an enlightening conversation, especially for anyone interested in screenwriting in general. I thought he had a lot of good insights to share. And to Nick directly, thank you for coming on the show, man. I think that was a good conversation.
So that does conclude this week's episode, and it concludes our conversation with Nick Assunto. Again, we want to thank him, and we hope you guys enjoyed it, and we hope you guys will stick around for future episodes. Thank you also to you guys, our listeners, for sticking around to the end and listening to everything we had to say. Thank you to our recurring listeners, as well as our new listeners. We really do hope you guys stick around for more. Like I said at the beginning of this episode, we have 4 new episodes coming out next week. On Monday, we'll be talking about Nostalgia Memories of Tomorrow, the short film we're working on. On Tuesday, we'll be talking about Iron Man 2008. On Wednesday, we'll be talking about Mystery Men with a special guest. And on Friday, we have an interview with Steve Chorney, the artist behind many, many great movie posters. So those are our upcoming episodes. Stick around for those. And if you want to make sure that you never miss anything, find us on social media. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Good Data Pod, and on Facebook at GDT Podcast. And if you're looking to find our episodes, I know you're listening to this right now, so hopefully you know where to find us, but you can find us by searching the letters GDT anywhere you listen to podcasts. So that means Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all the free ones as well. Find us there, subscribe, leave a 5-star review, and you'll never miss an episode. That's all for this week, folks. We will talk to you again on Monday.
Thank you for tuning in, folks. We love you. We'll see you on the next one.